Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights with Charlotte Spicer. Spirituality and Metaphysics Talk Radio, featuring A Course in Miracles, Dream Interpretation, Guided Meditation, and the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All. It's your opportunity to consult with a professional psychic medium, discuss past lives, the chakras, and more. We are non-denominational, and there are no limits. Want to change your life? You must first change your mind. No matter your religious structure, cultivate peace in your reality through self-awareness with an authentic spiritual teacher. And now, your host, Charlotte Spicer.
Well, hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. I want to know, do you struggle to fulfill your destiny, but you find you're terrified of change? Well, today we have Jake Ducey with us, a man ahead of his time. He's a 21-year-old author and activist who has traveled the world to find himself and actually did. Jake, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Excellent. So Jake has written a book called Into the Wind. And Jake, take us back to the beginning. What was going on that inspired you to write this book and take the journey that you did?
Well, absolutely. Regardless of where somebody's at, whether they're my age, I just turned 22 a couple weeks ago, or whether someone's 80, I think we can all relate to the fact that most of us are gambling on the biggest risk of all. That's the bet that one day, then we can buy the freedom to do what we want later in life, or then we can do it once we have enough, please enough people. After we follow this prescribed lifestyle that our parents, that society has laid down before us, but this prescribed lifestyle is overbearing, and hence we're at the highest rate of clinical depression ever, and teen suicide, and most heart attacks occur between the hours of 6 and 9 a.m. on Monday morning. And so it's clear that this prescribed lifestyle is overbearing. And so I feel it's up to each of us to make the choice about what our dream is and taking up the means pursuing that. And so while I sat there in my freshman year of college, I had to be honest with myself when I realized, like many of the people listening are probably on the path of reading self-improvement books or New Age books or maybe just practical success books and all in between, I realized to me the definition of happiness was living life on my own terms. And while I sat in a desk every day and then went to practice for 4 hours, I realized I was only doing it because I thought it was acceptable, and I thought that it was going to cause the least resistance from my parents, from my friends, from my peers, from my family. And I was honest with myself, and I realized that they were not my terms. And so that was really my awakening experience one day when I said, why am I doing all of this? And I think we never take the time to ask why we're doing anything.
So you had good things happening in your life. You were in college and you were playing basketball, correct?
Yeah. I just came off my senior year as the captain on the number one team in San Diego. I was first team all San Diego, and led the county in 3-point shooting, and went to school to play college basketball. I had numerous college scholarships.
Excellent. So you had a lot of good going on. You just weren't happy with yourself?
Yeah, because I think what happens is we're conditioned to think that life's going well if we have outer achievements. That's how we think we're happy rather than feel if we actually are. And we think that happiness comes from achieving a certain level of social success that other people praise us for, but that's just a recyclable relationship. That person says something great about me, now I got to go to the next, and it keeps this cycle repeating itself. And while I sat there freshman year realizing that I actually wasn't all that happy, I also realized something else, and that's that, you know, we have to make some changes in the way the world is going. 60% of the world is in poverty, and a football field size of the rainforest is destroyed every second, and my generation is on pace to earn less and have less than the previous generations. That's the first time that's ever happened. And then I sat there in class and I realized, you know, I'd started reading these self-improvement books, and a time comes when you're beginning this journey that you have to ask yourself, are you learning it or are you living it? Learning it,
right,
or living it. Learning it is sitting there day after day doing something that's less than what you're capable of, what you're really here to do. And living it is taking the step, taking the risk, even if you don't know exactly where to begin. And because our as Albert Einstein says, the highest destiny of an individual is actually to serve. And I wasn't serving anyone but myself.
Right.
And it's hard to be honest with ourselves about that, but I feel that if we really want fulfillment in our life, that has to happen.
I would absolutely agree. And so what made you put the brakes on, stop the cycle, and choose a different direction? What was the catalyst for this?
Well, I had flipped my car 4 times 400 feet down a ravine when I was drunk one night, and that was definitely an eye-opening experience to realize how short life was. And the second was just literally sitting there and saying, like many of the people maybe listening, is this really all that I want to do? And it wasn't. I said, what's the point in being alive if I'm not doing all that I want to do? I would rather not be alive than just kind of meandering through life. So it was just a choice my freshman year. And I said, wow, this is not fulfilling me. And I need space in order to find out who I am. And because I was so used to comfort, I sat down and I said, I'm so used to comfort. My food's always provided for me. 7 o'clock, this starts, and then I end at 8 o'clock at night. My schedule is all set up. And when we're so used to being comfortable, I think we can never uncover who we really are. And I had to find that out. And so I quit basketball, and the next semester I quit school. And it was basically realizing that there's a difference between learning it and living it, and I had to live it. And so for me, it was that I had to see if these principles were real, if we really all have a destiny, if we really all have a purpose, and if we really can live life on our own terms. And so it was a step into the unknown to fully uncover what my terms were.
And take me to the emotions around that time. Were you scared? Were you inspired? A little bit of both?
No, I was scared. I was both. I was both. I think that a lot of the times what happens is, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm scared. Oh, my gosh. Well, what's the worst that could happen? And then the mind starts running through. Well, what's the worst that could happen? And it starts thinking about all the bad stuff that could happen if we take a risk. But one thing that I found is that just because you're scared, it doesn't mean you can't take action. And oftentimes, some of the most beautiful parts of ourselves are revealed if we can take action in spite of fear. And so I was both inspired about the opportunities and possibilities that existed. If I could really trust in something that was greater, available to me, something larger than my own individualistic concerns about whether other people were going to be acceptable of my lifestyle, and that scared me. I think it scares all of us. If you're thinking about leaving a job, if you're thinking about studying something else, it scares us. But it's just I ask myself, what's more dangerous than to give up who I am in order just to fit in and be comfortable?
Right, just because of the fear of change, basically.
Yeah, and we live in a comfortable society. You know, everything's provided for us, and so. Change scares us because we're used to comfort, and uncomfortability is something new.
Well, I would, I'd like to add, you know, a lot of people have varying degrees of comfort. You know, like you said, you know, your generation set up to make, earn less, get less, you know, so there are very different levels of economic safety and comfort. And would you say that, you know, as we go through our lives, we become, let me use the analogy of having a 9-to-5 job in a brick and mortar setting, that you get so used to those walls of limitation that you think if you went beyond those walls, that's more frightening than being in a space that you're not happy in, but you're afraid to get out and you're afraid to stay there as well. And you get caught in that, in the cycles you described. You had the structure, and And you come from a pretty good family, from what I understand. So you had all this great structure, and yet something from soul level told you you needed to break out of it. And
I think kind of what can happen is we don't even realize that we're within walls. I didn't realize it until I took the time after hearing a Tony Robbins video that somebody had showed me, and he said that, you know, you have to define what happiness means to you. You have to define what success means to you. And happiness to me is living life on my own terms. And then I was like, well, are these all my own terms? Well, look at all these walls that have been here the whole time that I never even saw.
And that seem to be structured for your safety and comfort, but they're actually limitations, you're saying.
They're certainly... In order to experience freedom, there has to be a certain level of uncertainty. If you know everything that's going to happen all the time, then you're not free. You're just living in a routine your whole life. And so, to me, there has to be a certain level of uncertainty, which is the base of what a risk is trusting in something higher than ourselves.
Right. So, what would you say the reason is behind why so many of us are afraid to change and break out of those walls of limitation?
Well, what I was alluding to earlier, we're conditioned in a comfortable society. Whether you make $50,000 or $5 million, what we're consistently exposed to becomes our comfort zone. For some people, it's a 10,000 square foot house, and for other people, it's a 1,800 square foot house or a 1,000 square foot house. But our society is conditioned to comfort. We have TV readily available. You can walk down the street for 99 cents and get a bunch of ice cream when you're stressed out that can relax you on a sensual level and get you a sugar high. Then you can fall asleep and wake up the next day and do it all over again. And so we're conditioned to comfort. And our world has coined people that take risks as generally reckless or weirdos. And so it seemed as smart, safe, and secure in order to keep doing what everyone else is doing or what we've always done. And so we're averse to taking chances, to taking risks, because we don't know what will happen, because we're so used to what's already happening that the unknown scares us. Because if we're so in our comfort zone all the time, uncomfortability is not the most pleasing thing. It's like, you know, a lot of people won't work out because they don't want to tear their muscles, and that's how you build muscle. And
right.
The same way for stretching ourselves in life. We're never going to grow unless we're stretching ourselves. And to me, the purpose of life in one regard is to grow, is to learn. And there's only so much learning that could happen if you're in the same routine for 45 years of your life.
Yes, and that's funny you mentioned that, because I happen to be 45. Thanks for throwing me out there like that. But what would you, when you got to the threshold between where you were and not knowing what it would look like, but knowing that you had to take that first step, if you were ever going to get where you wanted to be, what got you to take that step over that threshold into the unknown, hanging on to that faith in something larger than yourself? What got you there, and how did you get over that threshold?
It was just what I was saying earlier. It wasn't so much as a physical event as it was a realization that, you know, what I've lived like this for so long. I'm numb because I can turn on the television and lie down on a couch or do this or do that, and what's more dangerous than to give up who we are? And I just said, I would rather not be alive than to find out really why I'm here. Because I don't want to be alive to wake up every day and do something I don't want to do. I would rather not be alive.
Right.
Like, it may sound blunt and harsh, but I mean that's my truth. You can't compromise on who you are. You either are who you want to be or you're not. One or the other. There's no, I'm kind of who I want to be. Yeah, you kind of are not, too.
Right.
That causes a lot of inner conflict. And inner conflict is only curable when we do what we want to do. You can't cure inner conflict. Every night anyone can lie down on bed at night, and they say the next day, how do I get rid of my inner conflict? Well, what do you want to do with your life? I want to do this. Are you doing it? No. Well, you're going to have inner conflict every single day until you do it.
Absolutely.
And I don't want it. I don't want that. Knowing that it's my responsibility to take it upon myself to find fulfillment. So it was
right.
Just a choice thing. I don't want anything less. I don't want anything less for my life. And I think it's a choice that we're all faced with every day. But usually we distract ourselves from ever having to really answer it.
I totally agree. But I think, you know, sometimes, well, not sometimes, much of the time, I'll say 99% of the time, I know I've done it in my life and I've seen other people do it. Sometimes people are afraid to make a change because of the reaction they're going to get from their families, from their spouses, from their kids. Like, you know, suppose you put yourself into law school and you spend 20 years being a lawyer, wake up and realize how unhappy you are and say, I'm just going to jump midstream and go do something else. And what was the reaction of your family to you making such
crazy.
A radical change?
Everyone thought I was crazy. My mom thought I ruined my life. And she said, you can't do this. And I said, watch me. Because you can't live your life for somebody else. You're never going to be fulfilled. You may be comfortable. You may be content sometimes. But you're never going to be fulfilled. There's a big difference, I think, between having gratification from the approval of others and being deeply fulfilled. Being
right.
Okay being alone by yourself. If you're living your life because you're seeking approval, you're probably not someone that's even comfortable being alone that much, because you need the energy of someone approving of what you're doing. And to me, fulfillment is the ability to just be okay with what you've done with your life. And so everyone thought I was crazy, but you know the common thread that you find between some of the greatest contributors to the world is this exact same thing. Martin Luther King was so resisted against what he was doing, he was assassinated. Bob Marley was shot. Gandhi was killed. John Lennon was killed. There's a crossroads that we're all faced with. Whether we want to live our life to seek approval, which is never going to fulfill us, and that's why we always need approval the next day, the next day, the next day, the next day. Or if we're just going to do it because we love doing what we're doing. You know, Abraham Maslow talks about that he calls them highly functional people. He says highly functional people are those who are doing what they're doing because they love it. So they're always in the process of creation, of creating. They're like, I'm doing this because I like to write, not because I need a book. So somebody says, wow, you're smart, you're a published author. He's writing it because he's like, man, I really love to do this. And then if he gets rewards from it, that's great. It's, you know, it can be a sign that, you know, he's on purpose. But he's not doing it in order to get those results. One is doing it because they love the creative endeavor of it. And to me, I think that's what happens when we're in the comfort zone for our entire life, is that we're not doing it for the process of creating it. We're doing it for the process of results, because then it's like, okay, then I get this paycheck, then I can go spend it on this and that. And that's great if that's where somebody's at. But personally, that's not what I want. I don't want out of my life to need something physical that I can continuously move around with in hopes that it can keep me distracted enough to never face my inner conflict of not really doing or not even trying to find out what it is that I'm here to do.
No, I think your words echo the thoughts of millions of people and, you know, the majority of us who we want the ultimate self-expression, but we feel that the way to get there is to have that safe step-by-step, you know, do this, get an education, get a job, then you can, you know, find a spouse, buy a house, have children. And it rarely goes in that order for many people, but so... Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. So what was the next step for you? So you shook it all up. Your mom thinks you're nuts. And you just packed up and went traveling around the world?
Bought a plane ticket and headed off to Guatemala. And, you know, I realized something. I realized that everything is a risk. we think when we're in our comfort zone that leaving it is a risk and staying where we are is safe, secure, and smart. But everything's a risk because, and I'm not saying one lifestyle is good or one lifestyle is bad, but let's say that you think that even though it's not something that it's all that you want, but you think that, you know, you need 2-car garage, 2 kids, and every morning you go get your coffee the same place and your eggs the same place, but that's a risk because what if your eggs get too hot and they spill on you and you burn your leg or something like that?
That's a risk.
And we never, you know, the risk of having kids. You're in debt for $100,000 for 3 kids to go to college. That's a risk that we never take into consideration, and we say that that's like the safe and accessible lifestyle because it's a lifestyle of least resistance. But, yeah, it's also a risk to step in the unknown and do something different. And we just have to ask, in my opinion. I had to ask myself, I said, well, what's the best possibility? What's the best that's available? And it was not to keep doing what I've been doing because I already knew what I was getting.
Right. But why Guatemala?
I went to Guatemala because I wanted to meet a Quechua Mayan shaman, and I wanted to have deeper insight into my life. I also know it's an extremely poor area. All over Homeland Security, it warned us at the time not to go to Guatemala, and so I had all the more urge to go there. And, you know, the first thing I saw when I got there was that there are kids. You know, I'm reading in these books at the time, you know, happiness is coming from within yourself, and I understood it conceptually, sure, but I hadn't experienced it. And one thing that I found was that there's a bunch of kids that are sitting on the curb every day with nothing, and they're happy. They're okay with it because they know that one thing I learned from these kids, just seeing them every day, is that we don't control every situation. You don't control what family you're born into, and you don't always even control all the events of following your dreams. I know I don't. But what you do control is the way you define those experiences. And I think that's the power that we have to step out of our comfort zone. Is something bad could happen, absolutely, stepping out of your comfort zone. But you don't relinquish the power to define those experiences. It's like there's two kids in Guatemala. I saw it. I grew up with nothing, yet they were happy. And there's kids in America who grew up with everything, and they're unhappy. And what's the difference? I don't think the difference is a circumstance at all, even though they're different circumstances. I think the circumstance is actually, I mean, I think the result is actually of how they viewed the circumstance, how they looked at everything in their life, and whether they were going to make the most of it or not. And so that's what I realized when I got to Guatemala. I was like, wow, these kids are sitting there every single day, no shoes. They got, you know, looks like their teeth are infected all over their arms, and they look like they're a mess. And it was what they had. And so, you know, it's like that quote. I think it's like, happiness isn't getting what you want, but wanting what you have.
Right. Right. No, I've heard stories about that. You know, children with absolutely nothing, no flooring in whatever type of home they're living in, and absolutely content and happy and glowing. And do you feel that the distance, I know there was a strong urge to go to Guatemala, and I can see that the push that not to go made you want to go even more. But do you think the distance from your family gave you a little more freedom to really let go and be who you were and take this journey day by day, step by step?
Yeah, but also no at the same time. Yeah, because I didn't have someone that if I didn't answer their calls, they couldn't. Well, I didn't have a phone, but, you know, for instance, you know, it's like if you have someone that isn't nearby you, that is not supportive of what you're doing, it certainly can give you a level of comfort, opposed to always worrying if they're going to show up where you are and say, stop that, what are you doing? You need to come back over here. But, you know, Jack Canfield, the creator of Chicken Soup for the Soul, he says, when he started in his career, his first mentor was W. Clement Stone, and W. Clement Stone said, so how's everyone in your life doing? He said, you know, what do you mean? He said, I want you to make a list of everyone in your life that you see on a pretty regular basis. Maybe some every day, some every week, every month, some you just communicate with a lot. Make a list of all of them. Put a plus or minus next to them. Plus, if they positively enforce you following your dreams, even if other people think your dream is stupid, and minus next to them if they don't. And all the people that are minuses, stop hanging out with them. He said,
right.
Well, my mom's a minus. And W. Clement Stone said, well, only see her on holidays. So regardless, I just wanted to make that clear, because in case there's somebody listening that's saying, well, it's easier because if they go around the world, because then they're not with the person, you can figure it out anyway. And ultimately what I realized was that everything I was looking for was within myself when I fell off a cliff in Indonesia and my whole life flashed before my eyes. And so I just wanted to make that a clear distinction in my view that, you know, regardless of where we're at, we can always figure it out.
Did you just say you fell off a cliff in Indonesia and your life passed before your eyes?
Yeah, I said it pretty casual, huh? Yeah. I traveled around for another 4 months.
Yeah,
you
have a real smooth way of saying, well, it started when I flipped my car 4 times when I was, and my jaw dropped when you said that, and now you just threw it out there. Oh, I fell off a cliff, I let my life flash before my eyes, and here I am today. No, take us to that.
What happened was I traveled around Guatemala. I traveled around Guatemala and met a Quechua Mayan shaman who told me, you know, about my car accident, about my transformation, so much so that I was more or less convulsing on the ground because I couldn't comprehend what was happening. And this man told me I was going to travel around the world and ultimately write a book to share with my generation that we're more powerful than we've been led to believe. And so I traveled around Australia, went to Indonesia from there, and before I boarded the plane to Indonesia, I actually lost all my bank cards. And I was at the airline counter when I realized it.
Oh.
And they said, you know, well, you could stay here or you could go anyways. And I had my passport and I had enough cash to get a hotel room and my visa, 30-day visa.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I'm going to go and see what happens. And I did that because I was testing the principle of calculated risk, take a step into the unknown. First, take the step. Most of us never take the step. Take the step into something that you feel maybe uncomfortable, that you're scared of doing. And when you
right.
can fully stand on both feet there, then everything will balance itself out, but not until. And so I got on the plane, went to Indonesia, got ripped off from my hotel room, and woke up the next morning with no money and was walking around downtown Indonesia and downtown Bali and met these guys. And I want to ask you a question. Have you ever met someone and when you looked into their eyes, it was like you already knew them?
All my life, yeah, that's happened.
Yeah, so
that I mean,
wonderful.
For me,
I'm
a psychic medium, and my life has this goofy, mystical quality to it, but I know absolutely what you're talking about.
So there's a guy standing on the street corner, a local guy, trying to sell some bracelets. And
mm-hmm.
and he, you know, tried to get my attention, and I told him, look, man, I don't have any money. And he's like, what? What do you mean? You know, thought I was messing with him. And I just came here without my bank cards. And he started laughing and takes a step closer. And they speak good English there because 65% of Indonesians make their living off of tourism. And takes another step closer and says, so you don't have any money? And I tell him my situation, and he puts his arm around me. And he looks up at me, he says, Rudy gonna take care of you. And puts me on the back of his motorcycle, and we head out into the projects, into 6x6 feet concrete shacks, hundreds of them one after another, where a lot of the locals live. And and I spend the next few weeks with him, and ultimately, you know, he took me to his island. He wanted to take me where he was from. He wasn't from there. He just went for tourist stuff.
Uh-huh.
And we were hiking in the rain one day, and I fell off a cliff, and I slipped on moss. We were climbing up boulders. It's not like America where we have our paved trails. There's not,
okay.
There's not
so
trails.
It was pretty rough terrain, yeah. And you slipped on some moss?
I slipped on a moss, and I fell about 12 feet. And I slipped, and I fell, and I could hear one of them screaming, and I could see my whole life flashing before my eyes, my travels most specifically. And this voice said in my head, "Will you be okay if you die right now?" And I answered it, and I said, "I'll be okay with that." You know, I didn't do everything that I thought I was capable of doing, but I was heading in that direction. And when I said that, this voice said back to me, "You're going to be okay." Boom! And as soon as I said that, I hit the ground, and I've been able to cover my head up. I landed down on my hip, side of my leg, and my ribs, and
okay.
The water from the waterfall and this mountain's rushing down on top of me, shooting on top of me, and I can hear them yelling my name. And I open my eyes after like 20, 30 seconds. I look, and I'm bleeding, and I realize to extend my legs. I realize nothing's broken, just landed on my muscle aspects, and
uh-huh.
I roll over a little bit, and jumps off after me. And I just start crying on the ground because it's the most incredible thing anyone's ever done for me besides my mom birthing me. And and I don't even know this guy, really. And he just could have just died jumping off after me. Well, he can't get to me because I'm stuck in between a few boulders. And so there's another one. There's a guy's up above me. And ultimately, after about 5 minutes, you know, they're saying, "Jump, jump, jump." And they're able to levy themselves down and just yank me up. And I think, you know, they're like, "Jump," and I don't want to jump because I'm going to pull them down. I'm 6'4", 180 pounds, and they're 5'3", 130 pounds. And
right.
And they pull me up, and long story short, they saved my life. And I was in shock. That's more in shock that somebody had done that for me than I was about what had happened. And that night, you know, they got me back on the safe ground, and that night I was lying in my bed, and I realized that I traveled around the whole world, tasting different foods, going to different cultures, seeing different geography, architecture, meeting people, shaking hands, hugging, smelling different airs, oceans, all thinking then I would find that thing, and it was within me the whole time. And so you don't have to travel around the world. All you have
right.
to do is recognize that when Martin Luther King was saying, "I've been to the mountaintop," he wasn't talking about a lounge chair on Saturn, the rings of Saturn, where Jesus and Buddha drink coffee. He was talking about a place within ourselves where we ultimately choose what things mean to us. We choose the opportunities. We choose how we feel. And we don't choose all of our circumstances, but we do choose the way we feel. And from that position...
Right.
We don't need to go anywhere in order to begin to uncover who we are.
Wow. So how would you recommend to others on how to access that space where you can be sure of what you want, who you are, what you want to do with your life, and what your purpose is?
Two things. That's a wonderful question. Here's something that I learned from one of the kids out there. I'm going to invite you and anyone and everyone listening to close your eyes for a sec and,
okay.
and smile as wide as you can. Big, huge smile. Smile, smile. And notice, have your emotions change. Just that big smile on your face. You feel all your energy is shifted, maybe even a little, maybe a lot. Just taking note to that.
Actually, once I relaxed into the smile and opened my heart, I got dizzy. You know, just those spirals of energy. I have a little dizzy spell going on right now. My eyes are still closed.
So.
And I just feel, you know, an overflow of warmth and love and contentment. I really do.
So I didn't do that. You did that. And you did that with your choice. And so what I would suggest or recommend to everyone listening and anyone not listening, is to realize that you did that off your own choice. And so that's the place, that's the mountaintop, that's within yourself. And it's not a seven-step process to accessing it, and it's the answer is not in any books. The answer is your choice. That's mm-hmm. all it is. And it's nothing, you don't need to learn how to exercise choice. You just have to choose and choose things that inspire you rather than expire you. And so that's the place within yourself that you just chose to smile. You made yourself feel like that, not me. You did that. And so I suggest people take that into consideration, that they have the opportunity to truly feel the way that they want to feel. And when you're feeling the way you want to feel, then material things come to you, but they're byproducts of being internally fulfilled off your own choice. And Sue, I always ask this question, what would have to happen 1 year from now in order for you to look back and say it was your most successful, your most fulfilling year yet? What would have to happen 1 year from now in order for you to look back and say it was your most successful, your most fulfilling year yet? And sit with that for a second. What would have to happen? When that goes back to choice, really what you want to do, that's defining your term. What would have to happen 1 year from now for you to look back, say it was your most successful, your most fulfilling year yet? And I feel
the year we're currently in.
Yeah,
you're saying a year from now, what has to happen in the year 2000 to make the year 2013 your most successful year yet?
I'd say take out 2013 and just say 12 months from today. 12 months from today. And I ask this question because one thing that I found is most people that aren't fulfilled or discontent, have inner conflict, usually they don't have a vision. They don't have actionable goals. I think a compelling future creates momentary excitement, momentary motivation.
Right.
Something that we can work forwards to today. And I think that's why most heart attacks occur between the hours of 6 and 9 a.m. on Monday morning. People don't have anything to look forward to. And so I think the first step is to define what it is that our terms are. Happiness, to me, is living life on our own terms and defining that. And when we do, then remember the first thing, that it's your choice, that you can make it happen and live the way that you want to live. And I think it's that simple. And it's easy to do, is also easy not to do, for sure. But it comes back to, what do you want out of your life?
Right.
And I don't know, isn't a sufficient answer if fulfillment is something that one wants. I don't know, it doesn't matter. Those aren't sufficient answers. It does matter. It does matter, or else we wouldn't be asking ourselves these questions.
Yes, and we wouldn't be harboring all these negative emotions and, you know, everything that we're going through internally that results in your external conflict, and you keep trying to change the effect, and you're the cause, all that good stuff. But I want to, you know, you're talking about Monday morning heart attacks. Actually, you know, in my 20s, I had it pretty tough. I didn't have a lot of comfort, but I was on my own finally, and I did find a place of contentment where I can control my environment, and it was peaceful and nonviolent. And my heart attack would actually start on Sunday evenings, knowing that I had to go to work the next day.
Somebody had said that to me the other day. I thought that was so interesting.
They said
Saturday's nights they'd go to sleep and be so excited because they didn't have anything to do. And then Sundays they'd be like, oh my gosh, I have 5 days now of misery.
Of misery.
There's no way to live life.
Exactly, and, you know, I eventually figured it out because I'm sitting here now, but it took till almost the age of 30, but, you know, with the way people act in offices and, you know, the office environment, I'll just stick with offices. There are many different types of jobs, but going to a workplace, you're dealing with other people and you're dealing with their past and their history and their battles in high school that they're still trying to win in a new environment, you know, and they have all this stuff in their head. And many of the people we work with represent our parental figures, our family members, and things that we experienced in the past. And I do feel that it's a huge opportunity for forgiveness. But I think coming from, you know, with this conversation with you, which I find totally inspiring, and I'm impressed and amazed that you get it to this level at your age. So kudos to you. But I think the most important thing is, you know what? Forgive yourself. Let yourself off the hook. Take a risk, which is what I did at 28. And just break out of these chains that are holding you back, keeping you unhappy, and that make you feel on Sunday evenings, I don't know if I can take going in there one more day or if you don't like the way people treat you, get up, shake it up, make a change. And I wanted to make a recommendation to the listeners. Now, you did an exercise with me, and there will be thousands of people who will access the archive of this broadcast. But as I went through this little exercise that Jake took me through, I closed my eyes, I smiled as instructed, but with what I do and my habits is I immediately opened my heart. So I would recommend to everybody, close your eyes, smile, open your heart. And then when he asked the question, 12 months from now, a year from now, what would have to happen to show you that this was the most successful year of your life? And I didn't know where to go with that question. I didn't know what to think of. I didn't know how to formulate the answer. So what I did was I stopped trying and stopped that grasping energy of, okay, so are we talking downhill? Just don't visualize being at the bottom of a hill and looking at last year as the top of the hill and like, yes, that was my most successful year. The experience that just happened to me was when I stopped trying to formulate an answer in my mind, the answer rose up from down deep in my abdomen and from my subconscious mind. And the answer that came to me is that this year was the year that I've done a lot of good work over 20, 30 years on myself. But what I did this year was I finally got out of my own way to be who I wanted to be without regard to other people's opinions or without regard to other people's jealousy or that they might just feel a little sad about themselves if something good happens in someone else's life. All this stuff that was placed on my head for most of my life, like, don't go out there and be great because you're going to make me feel bad about myself. And that was largely what held me back in my 20s. But this was the year I think I broke that last link in the chain. And while I was aware of it, Jake, your question, that little exercise you just walked me through, kind of brought that home that, yes, I would think no matter what happens 5 years from now, 2013 will be my most successful year because that was the year I stepped out of my own way and allowed basically my soul to take the wheel and drive the car. Does that make sense to you? I know that was kind of long-winded.
No, absolutely. You know, I thankful you said that because, you know, I think we can overthink the answer to it, but our dream isn't your life's work isn't a concept. It's not something that comes from the mind. It's something that's arising from deeper within ourselves. And it's not something we can figure out. We can't figure out all the answers. And it's, like you said, it's something that comes to us. It works through us, rather. And allowing it to work through us rather than trying so hard to find it. And so, yeah, I mean, I think then the next step for anyone that's been able to define that listening is how. How are you going to take some steps? And granted, you don't know all the hows, but, you know, if you're going to build a staircase, it'd probably be a good idea to get some nails and wood
and
build
the
first step.
Exactly.
And a hammer. Hammer would be a good idea.
Good idea. You could always use your hand or your forehead, but you might not be pleased with the experience. And do you go into this stuff in your book? Tell us a little more about the book and the primary concept you have to offer the reader.
I wrote the book because I wanted to convey what I learned, and that's that we're more powerful than we've been led to believe. And when we take a step towards, you know, that inner calling, then our destiny unfolds. And when we dedicate our life to something higher than ourselves, then everything opens up. And so this is a book about my journeys. It's not a typical self-help format. It's a book about my journeys that what happens in story, that I love about story, is that it allows us to reflect on our own life. And so it's from the beginning of my time in college to the end where I actually ended in 14-day silent meditation in Thailand. That's how my book ends. And it's about the journey of taking a risk and what's possible when we can fully put our faith into something higher than ourselves, which to me is what a risk is. Risk is
ultimate surrendering to something higher than ourselves and then taking the step anyway.
Absolutely. And so at the end of your journey, I'm sure there's so much more about it than we can cover in an hour, but how did you get home? Because that's one of my deepest fears is being lost and unable to fend for myself. How did you, you know, and I understand, I did get a long time ago into a space of, don't worry, every new day God will send the people that you need. So how was it that you were homeless, penniless, basically, but you had your passport? How long were you gone?
I met somebody 6 months. I was going to, you know, part of me was like, I don't know, maybe I'll never come back. And I realized there was nothing I was looking for, so it was time to come back. I met a woman from Canada that had paid for my plane flight from Indonesia to Thailand. I think what happens is when we, most of us never take the steps, so we never even find that out. But I think one thing that we find between a lot of people who have quote unquote made it to whatever their own standard is, living life on their own terms, is that they share a similar experience when they took the steps and everything appeared for them. And that's what happened. Here, I cover you, you know. You'll be okay. And in Indonesia, when I had no money, the locals fed me every day. I sat on the curb and ate out of wax paper bags, rice and noodles with my hands on the curbs, and they fed me every day.
Wow. Yeah, you have a lot of great pictures on your website of some of the people you've encountered and friends you made in other countries. And so when you did get home, first, what did your mom have to say initially? I picture you coming home with, like, sticks and leaves in your hair, like, Mom, I'm home. But, and what did she, kind of like, you know, like
I
a runaway, like,
her.
Beat up, scraped up, twigs in her hair, like, okay, I'm home, I went on my walkabout. What did she say when you
actually,
first got home, and what does she think of you now?
Well, I actually surprised her. I didn't tell her I was coming home. I just showed up, and I got in through a back door, and she was at dinner, and she came home, and I was sitting on the dinner table, and started crying and was happy to see me on the chair.
Oh, okay, at the dinner table, not on the dinner. Sorry,
the
I just
dinner
needed
table.
To clarify, because that's quite the picture.
And,
like,
you know, within an hour into being home, she was in fear about what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And I told her, I'm going to write a book. And she said, well, how are you going to write a book? You never even were good at writing. You know, you got 1400 on your SAT and you didn't pass your junior English class in high school. And there's one thing that we find, that the will to do something overrides our past failures, lack of skill, lack of this, lack of that, whatever excuses we have, the will overrides it. And so I said, I'm going to write this, and this is what I'm going to do. And so I went out to this nature preserve nearby my house, a 560-acre nature preserve, and I made a goal to finish the book. That was May 2011, and I finished the book first draft before July that year. And I mean, it's been an Amazon top selling book for its categories, and we sold the whole first print. And you know, she was worried, but now she's happy. I'm happy that I'm happy and doing what I love to do, and helping a lot of people. You know.
Yeah. Are you an only child?
No, I have a brother who's 25.
Okay. So it's just you and your brother?
Yeah.
I can't imagine how difficult this was for your mother.
Yeah,
but I'm happy that she is now a little calmer and a little more trusting that you, when you trust God, you're always going to be okay. Back in college when you were, you know, in that limited safety zone but messing up and flipping cars, that's when you were trying to make all the decisions. But so I hope she sees that. I'm sure she does. I like her energy. I can kind of pick up on her. But what? Tell me about, you started raising funds for people. Tell me what that, how the project started quickly, because we have about 10 minutes left.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things the shaman told me was that I was going to be helping impoverished children. And so what we did was we raised money to put together an orphanage school that did a few things. One, the result was that there was a Gringo de Guatemalteca born there, a white Guatemalan. The shaman's brother named his kid after me, Jake Oxla Gomez. And so that was really cool to see that, if we really commit to making a difference, then anything's possible. And the second thing that happened is we gave about 30 kids the opportunity to have a role model in the shaman Fernando, who teaches them their Mayan roots.
Wow. How hard was that? And where did you get the funding? Did it fall into place for you once you made the decision to do it, or was it a lot of effort?
Well, I think everything falls into place for us once we take action. I think most of us can make the decision, but then we never take the action.
That's
so
true.
Yeah, we just went around and we told people, look, we don't have a 501c3, you're not going to get your money back. You want to help? And people did.
And it says that you speak of a universal language. What is that, and what did you learn about it throughout this whole journey?
Universal language is not what dialects of our tongues we speak with. There's a lot of people I became friends with that I couldn't even speak to them in sound. And so to me, the universal language is that connection of the heart, is that empathy that I'm here to understand more about you. And that develops a mutual respect. What you were saying about going in with an open heart, to me, that's the same thing as seeing somebody and before you even spoken words and before you know them, you feel you know them. That's not because you've written an essay to them and handed it to them through a secret admirer box. That's a type of a heart or a soul level connection that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an awesome experience when, you look at somebody and your heart's open and you just get that response, whether it's an adult, a baby, an animal, it's just when you have that love there. That is, love is universal language and we're all connected. And so your website, I have a link to it on the show page, but your website is...
Yeah, my website, my name is Jake, J-A-K-E, and my last name is Ducey, D as in David, UCEY.com, JakeDucey.com, and yeah, my book's Into the Wind, and you can get that on Amazon, there's all those cool little sales, so Amazon's nice and cheap.
Yeah, and you have excellent, excellent, excellent feedback on Amazon. I scrolled through them yesterday. I wanted to see how the book is doing. And you have... let me read this. This is from Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple Inc. His testimonial to this book is, "Once upon a time, there were visionaries who formed Apple Inc., transforming the world, Steve Jobs and me. Now, Jake is here to transform the world in his own right." One more is from Richard Kahn, or Cohn, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but Richard Kahn, publisher of The Secret and founder of Beyond Words Publishing. "Jake's journey and book are proof that when we follow the law of attraction, miracles become regularities and we live our wildest dreams while love surrounds us." That's pretty awesome to have testimonials like that. And I have to say that the way you explain your journey and your feelings and all the concepts and philosophies that you wanted to convey to people, I find it a very practical way to express. I think you do extremely well. I think it's easily digestible by anybody, no matter their level of spiritual awareness, and that I absolutely think that everybody should get your book. I think we'd all benefit by it. Doesn't matter how much you know, it's how much you're willing to learn and share with others. And by all means, consider it as a gift for Christmas. Put this in someone's hands who you think might be not making the best decisions for themselves, or they're stuck in a rut, or you just know they're unhappy, whether it's your friend or a family member or even a coworker who's torturing you. But slip this book into their hands as a gift. It's not expensive, but it could be priceless to them and could really change their lives to learn through Jake's journey how to set their feet on the path of their own. I really think it's important, and consider that the holidays are coming, and for any occasion, graduation from high school into college, empower somebody to want to take a risk, break beyond their limitations. I think that's a very powerful gift. Jake, I really appreciate you coming on and spending time. You're really something. What's next for you?
Well, first, I'd just like to say thanks for all those kind words. I appreciate it. And it's received. And, you know, what's next for me is I'm really proud to be giving a TED Talk on October 18th about the difference between learning it and living it. I'm really excited about that.
And where does that take place?
That is in Orange County, California. Southern
on
California.
What day and time?
18th? That is on October 18th, yeah. I think 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, something like that.
Okay.
And I'm really excited about that, and we're in the second print now of the book, and so now on the clouds of the book and the cover up there, we got endorsement from Jack Canfield. It says, "Into the Wind is one long chicken soup for the soul story." Jack Canfield, creator of Chicken Soup for the Soul. And so I'm really thrilled about that. So next step is, you know, continuing in the direction I'm going. You know, I want Into the Wind to be a major motion picture, and those are few of the goals that I keep in my conscious awareness.
Yes. No, I can kind of feel that. You have big things coming. I should probably give you a reading at some point. You might be entertained by it. Although for you, you wouldn't need it, but I think you have a lot of pleasant surprises coming. I think you'll make a lot of difference in this world, and really, especially with the younger kids, like as you move away from this age bracket of 18 to 22, I think you might find that those are your one of your focal points to kind of reach in and help them out, and I think you'll be very successful. Yeah, and I do feel film around you. So I think you have an excellent path ahead of you, and I'm just amazed that you put yourself on it at such a young age. It's really something to be proud of.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Wow. Okay. Well, Jake Ducey, everybody. Go get his book, jakeducey.com. Available on Amazon.com. Check it out, and if you're in Orange County, California, on Friday, October 18th, somewhere around 6 or 7 p.m., will you announce that on your website, Jake, that what time people and where they can go to register for that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, I mean, it's TED, so you just go to the TED site, and you can find the specific event location. And so, yeah, I will be doing that as well, though, absolutely.
It's website? Did you say?
TED Talk is, you know, TED's one of the largest speaking platforms in the world. I didn't know.
Okay,
yeah,
so at that website.
TED is.
So they can do a Google search, or do you know the exact address?
Oh, it's just TED, T-E-D, T-E-D.
TED.com?
Yeah, and, you know, you could go on YouTube, and if you haven't before, I think you'd really enjoy TED Talks. A lot of cool people have presented at some TED Talks. One, you may have seen it, one by Brene Brown. It's gotten like 10 million hits now.
She gave
a TED Talk about being vulnerable.
That sounds familiar, TED Talks. I have heard of that. I have. I was wrong. Okay, so TED.com, and then you can find information on Jake's appearance and go
Absolutely.
Listen to his talk and get some inspiration.
Oh, right on.
Goodness. Excellent time talking with you, Jake. I wish keep in touch. If anytime you want to come on the show and let us know what you're doing, I'd be happy to hear from you.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. I'll support you any way I can. Well, that's our show for today, everybody. I thank you for joining us and tuning in. And be sure to check out Jake Ducey. He's really something and a real leader, I think. So everybody have a wonderful day. God bless and be at peace. Bye, everyone.